Stacey?
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for joining me.
Oh, I'm glad you reached out.
I am so excited that you are, creating the Bit Intel, or you created the Bit Intelligence YouTube channel. I've been checking it out, and there's so many playlists that I have to take a deep dive into that because there's so many cool videos I found. I never realized that. That Tomer Strohlite video you made, the legendary treasure of Satoshi, you made that. That is incredible. Like, so many people saw that video, and it literally just made me like, I always felt like Satoshi was a like real life superhero, and that visualization, like the way you put it together, and just having Tomer's voice and just everything, I don't know how it was done creatively. It was just a collaboration of genius. The way you explain things is and visualize them for people is a really great way for people that don't understand it to actually see why it's valuable. And you're doing a great job.
Wow, thank you so much. That's such a nice compliment. I actually just recently rewatched it because I hadn't watched it in a long time. Of course, like when you make a film like that, you watch it like, I don't know, who knows, like 1,000 times, because you're just watching and rewatching and then like adjusting and rewatching and adjusting and rewatching. That came from Tomer's article with the same name. So it was like, that article has existed for a few years, maybe a few years longer than the legendary treasured film. And I had read it before, and I had started to make videos with like Tomer's writing already. And then I approached him at a conference. I did, and then he called me back, and we started doing a few more together. And then he was like, "I think you should do this big one." And it's like a, it was a 38-minute read, and I was like, "Oof, okay, that's a long video." But then I broke it up into three different sections. There's five parts, I believe, in the article, so I kind of lumped a few parts together, and that made it a little bit more of like a bite-sizable chunk, a 16-minute video instead of a 38-minute video.
When I
But
saw
then.
the first one, and I think I remember seeing something about there going to be a part two, I couldn't wait. I was like, this is so good. Like, I think I watched it a few times. And I remember it. Like, it was something that stuck with me. And it was so good that I was just like, I felt like I was watching this. You have like a series that you binge watch and you can't wait for the next episode. That's how I felt. I was like,
That's
oh, that's what,
amazing.
yeah, it really got people like hooked, to see what's coming next. How are you going to do the rest of it? And then I saw that it was a full movie version. So you put it all together for people that just wanted to sit down and watch the whole thing.
Exactly. I think it plays better as a full movie. Like, I don't know. Like when I was making the first few iterations of this, it was still like a completely new style of video for me. Like I have a background in documentary filmmaking.
I saw
And
that, yes.
so, yeah. And so like I am used to showing up to a place and setting up an interview and making it look all nice. And then, interviewing the subject on whatever the documentary film is about. And a lot of the times for me, it was about fishing because I worked in the fishing world for a while. All sorts of different type of fishing, like all the way from sport all the way to commercial. And so we would, show up and talk to people and then kind of cut a film down from there. But then the whole like Bitcoin films started, or at least I started kind of learning how to make those when the AI stuff came out. And I was like, as a filmmaker, I should probably get ahead of, the AI in some way, or figure out what it is, how it works. And so that's when I kind of was trying to make all these different AI images, and it really came out kind of similar to like a graphic novel, in a way. It's not like quite as characterized as comic books. But it does have that style of like graphic kind of storytelling that I think kind of played really well with the story of Satoshi. And it's just a really incredible story, right? Like and it's crazy that it's true. I
I
think that's
know.
like one of the most powerful things at the beginning is like this is a true story. It won't seem like it when you're listening to it, but it is. And it's opened many people's minds to what could be.
And that's why the feeling that we get from Satoshi, like all of us that know about Bitcoin, we have that like awe of the like how he solved this problem. And I think watching one of your videos, I realized that, I think it was the one with Natalie Brunell that you did. And I think I realized that it was something that you said, that it was a problem that no mathematician could solve. And it was something that I think I knew that, but just hearing it in your video, it just was really powerful. Like, I ended up clipping that part because I was like, that's so true. Like, people said it can't be done. Like, they gave up on it. They thought it wasn't going to happen. And then it happened and he figured it out. And it's like, we all think about Satoshi constantly. Like, I feel like we understand he wants to be anonymous, and he knew that from day one to stay anonymous, but we still can't help but wonder, you know, like how this person was so superhuman to be able to walk away from such a thing and understand its power so early on to stay so anonymous from the beginning. So for you to portray that in a video that way, it does feel like lore. It feels like a video game lore or like a comic book story or something. Like, it doesn't feel like real life. And this is a true story. And having that background of filmmaking, and you did documentary style film, it's crazy how you could switch over from doing that sort of work. And now you're the director of marketing for Jan 3, right?
Yeah, correct.
So that is amazing that you were able to take that, because you took your skills from filmmaking in the documentary world, and now you can implement that into Bitcoin. I feel like I can't wrap my head around like what you do every day.
Yeah, it's a lot different than what I've been used to for the last several years. I'll back up a little bit. Like, I have a degree in architecture.
Speaking of which, your background, that architecture behind you is very interesting.
Yeah, this. Yeah, I love this cabin. It's quite pretty. We live in the mountains, so we live in a very small little cabin. It's quite cold at times, but it's, you know, it's beautiful.
Sorry to stop your story, because I want you to get into how you want to start off and tell us how you got into it. But you are into skiing.
Yes. Do you see this red nose right here? This like goggle tan.
I could see the snow outside.
Yeah.
So I noticed your Instagram page where you're posting your skiing stuff and everything. So that's really amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. Like, my story of like getting into Bitcoin is so like circuitous and kind of like, I think, different than maybe a lot of people that you see on X and whatnot. It really like started with me wanting to start my own company, film company. When I moved, or at least when I started working after college, I kind of really quickly got this like vibe. It's like, is this what life is? You know, so it was like a year and a half after that where I was like, you know what, I need to take a little break. I need to move to the mountains and kind of like pursue, you know, some of these things that I really love in my life. And one of those things was skiing. And so when I got here, I was still working as an architect, and but I was getting more and more into film. I've always been into editing videos. Most of it had been like, you know, GoPro ski videos. But I'd gotten quite good at editing, just because, you know, you have to know some technical, you know, or at least you have to know how to use like Adobe programs. After a while, I just got to know some of the right people, and I got a few local jobs. And that snowballed into a small film company. You know, started to acquire camera gear and started to get bigger jobs and started to travel more. And it got to a point where I was like traveling like once a month or more. I would like touch down in the mountains and, you know, then go fly off to some other place. And oftentimes it was a very cool place. It's Alaska, you know.
For work, you would travel like for your film company?
Yeah.
Okay.
But it started to get a lot as well. And I guess bringing it back to Bitcoin, I also was in a non-traditional role. So anyone that starts their own company is in a non-traditional role like that, where they don't really have access to the same vehicles that people do when they're in companies, like a 401k, you know, the healthcare, you know, like simple things like that. You kind of have to deal with all that stuff on your own. And so while in the process of, you know, thinking about stuff and was like, okay, well, how am I going to save for my future?
Yeah.
And that road, like, pretty quickly led me to Bitcoin. Of course, there's a few tangents here and there. You know, anyone that's learning about Bitcoin and cryptocurrency can obviously be, you know, pulled into the crypto side of it easily, especially at first, without, you know, having wrapping their heads around the bigger picture of what this means for the world. And so, you know, after a few years of kind of learning about that stuff, I really did kind of catch the Bitcoin maxi itch, realizing that, like, you know, really the world is broken in a way. And you see it throughout history. It repeats this cycle of, you know, boom and collapse and boom and collapse on many different scales, right? There's, you know, booms and collapses within an economy, but there's also booms and collapses on a more civilizational scale of, you know, empires. And what comes down to it is just the debasement of the currency that creates these cycles. And these cycles are very violent, you know, at least in the way that they end traditionally. It almost always ends in war. And lots of people die. It's really just because of the strain that governments put on their citizens through monetary debasement. And so that, and on top of, you know, the monetary properties of gold and, you know, kind of more simple stuff like that of why Bitcoin is important and why it's a store of value, got my brain thinking. And eventually I was like, okay, I understand this technology, and I've adopted the technology, and I have a certain set of skills that might make, you know, might help me be able to educate other people as well in a different way. And kind of similar to what you were saying at the beginning, like, the legendary treasure of Satoshi Nakamoto, let's just call that, like, the AI style that I had been doing for a little bit. That was very different than what was out there on the market in terms of, like, Bitcoin education. Right. It's almost, like, hard to say it's education. It's, like, almost like entertainment, right?
Yes, yeah. Well, that's the thing. People do get entertained or get educated by entertainment. So it's like when people are, like, a lot of people find finance boring and they don't care to learn about money. So this is the perfect way for people to learn, because they're actually entertained while also understanding in an entertaining way, you know? So it's like, it actually can help people visualize it and actually see it, you know?
Yeah. And, like, the history of money is a fascinating story. I mean, history just in general is packed with, like, really interesting stories. And, and, you know, as a subject in school, I was always, like, pretty into history. I remember taking, like, AP history and in high school and just being like, there's so much interesting stuff out there. Like, I can't believe that, like, this actually, like, happened. And if you look back in history, like, the history of money is really fascinating too, because it brings up all these topics that, like, haven't really been taught about. And it's like, a lot of that stuff have been, like, swept under the floor, you know, and just kind of glazed over. Because it's
the root of these wars and these problems and these things that happened in history comes down to a lot of the debasement of currency and how these all, they don't get to the root cause of why these things happened. It's just kind of like, you know, they just tell you about the war, but they don't tell you how the war started or why or what happened to these civilizations. So it's weird that we don't learn about that part of it in school, which is kind of like, again, it's a root cause. Like, you know, they say money is the root of all evil, and it's like, especially when there's human greed involved, and that's just been the story.
Particularly, like, only when there's human greed involved, right? Like, I've referenced that you know, phrase a lot, and because people are like, oh, you know, like, you know, money is associated with greed, but when you really, like, separate humans and human greed from money and monetary technology, then you realize that that's a completely separate thing. And you can actually have a monetary technology that disincentivizes greed and actually just prevents it from building up, like you see it do in a lot of our civilizations throughout history. So, you know, and it's really, it comes back to the control over money. You know, the greedier, the, you know, the prince or the, you know, the royal family, you know, the worse off their citizens are going to be because they're going to clip their coins and, you know, finance huge projects that are, you know, probably unnecessary for a variety of reasons. And, the Bitcoin breaks that link between, I mean, it's an incorruptible money. Whereas every other money that we've seen in history, including gold, has been corruptible for reasons of like it being physical and, you know, seizable and malleable. And, you know, you can mix gold with other metals to, you know, to basically dilute its elemental properties and stuff like that. So I know there's lots of gold bugs out there in the world and.
Yeah, we all know the main big one that we all, I mean, I feel like I constantly talk about him, but it's like he has a way of, even though I don't care what this person says, I feel like he has a way of frustrating me, and he knows it. He knows he can, and you know who it is, I'm sure, but this is the first time in history that you can escape that cycle. When everyone else in the world is using it, you have to also adopt the technology. So it's kind of like, you know, before people would fight over money, you know, in like different countries would fight over money or resources or minerals that are rare, and they would try to take land and fight for that land. But when Bitcoin is more valuable because it's scarcity, people would stop fighting for land and territory and minerals as much as now that this other thing has been created that's actually scarce. So people will actually stop the fighting and just try to acquire and use their, you know, proof of work and, you know, mine it and actually like do it a different way.
It's almost like they're just gonna, you know, transfer the physical force into energy and, you know, an electrical force into the Bitcoin network. So rather than fighting, you know, people and things and countries, I think you're gonna see nations fight for energy. Try to develop the strongest energy, you know, generation system of you know, the world or whatever, because if they can generate the most energy, they can generate the most Bitcoin. And you know, if you have that hash power, you do have an advantage in your country over other countries. And you really like aren't really seeing this yet. I think we're really on the precipice. I think 2025 is the beginning of this. Someone asked me recently on a podcast, like, is game theory playing out now that, you know, the Trump administration has adopted Bitcoin and, or at least said that they will adopt Bitcoin in some form or another. And I think game theory has been playing out since the very beginning, you know, and it's just happened. It started with individuals. And then it's moved to corporations, and now it's moved to nation states. And we're seeing this like play out in front of our eyes. And the question is like, how fast is it going to happen? You know, Bhutan is mining Bitcoin aggressively. El Salvador is mining Bitcoin. You know, the US may be mining Bitcoin in the near future. There's probably other countries that we don't know about that are mining Bitcoin. And those countries aren't only getting the economic power from Bitcoin, they're also strengthening their energy grids. They're developing new ways, you know, to create energy in their countries in sustainable ways. Because, you know, if your energy is free, then you're just turning energy into money for free. But you're also, you know, improving the lives, you know, and the reliability of your energy grids for your citizens.
Well, I spoke to somebody recently from Nigeria, and it was super eye-opening because he was talking about how what a huge market cap Nigeria is and how Strike and I think Jack Dorsey and Jack Mullers, and, you know, they opened up this market for their companies in, you know, in Nigeria. And while we were having the podcast, he had a couple power outages, and it was really interesting because he said like he had to go turn on his backup generator so that we can continue the podcast. And he was like, leave the footage here. This is important for people to see how Bitcoin could strengthen the energy grid. And a lot of people make that argument in the US, like even on, you know, CNBC, you hear people talking and they're just saying, well, what's the use case for Bitcoin? Have you been outside of the US? Like, have you talked to anybody outside of the US? They're using it because they have no choice. Their currency is trash. They have to switch over to something to save themselves. So they're not just hoarding it like people think here. It's like, yeah, we do want to, you know, accumulate the scarce resource, that the scarce asset that it is. But people are using it, you know, they're using it for their everyday lives, you know? So it's like the argument is ridiculous that people that have blinders on don't want to look outside of where they live.
Yeah. I mean, so, it goes back to, you know, Alex Gladstein's book, Check Your Financial Privilege. I love that book because I think it really puts it in perspective, like the reasons why Bitcoin is important for the world. It may not be apparent to people that live in westernized countries because we just have access to savings vehicles that other people don't have. They might not be as good as Bitcoin, but because we have access to those things, it makes it seem as if, like, what is, you know, Bitcoin doesn't have a use case, right? Like, if it's this speculative thing that's just going up in these huge bubbles, and but we have, you know, our ability to buy the S&P 500 over here that goes up 7 to 14% a year, you know, why do we need this other thing? Well, other people can't buy the people in Nigeria can't buy the S&P 500. Most people in the world can't really buy the S&P 500. Most people in the world have to save outside of their local currency because their local currency is debasing faster than, you know, is good for them to save their money in that currency for any long period of time. So oftentimes you see people reaching out to, you know, save in dollars. And particularly in the global South, it's like you, if you don't have a bank account that is a dollar denominated bank account. So you, even if you're banked in your local currency, you still can't find a way to save dollars. And so you're still in this like risky setting where, you know, all your money is being denominated in this rapidly devaluing currency. You're never finding a way to get ahead. And even if you are and you're saving that currency, it's devaluing faster than you can keep up with the pace of inflation and your, you know, your income streams. And so you're trapped in this cycle and people are looking for dollars, right? And so you see people hoarding like literal physical dollars overseas under their mattress. And that's why I wanted to bring up Aqua here.
Is that being used in El Salvador, Aqua Wallet, or is that, I mean, I know it's everywhere, but I want to hear more about it because I don't know too much about Aqua Wallet.
Yeah, we've seen a lot of adoption in Latin America and Brazil, Argentina. I think it has just been a happy product market fit where, you know, just exactly what I was saying before, people are looking for dollars to save and we give them access to digital dollars inside a Bitcoin only wallet. And so, you know, it's Bitcoin only. However, we do have Tether integrated. The reason I say that is because, like, if you're using Tether in any other way, you have to have a wallet from one of these other crypto chains, because that's generally how Tether has been used, right? It's you can get it on Ethereum, you can get it on Tron, you can get it on Binance Chain, you can get it on, you know, all the different other chains that are around, and that kind of forces people into this speculative crypto world, right? And and a lot of the times I think that hurts people more than helps them. However, if you're just looking for dollars and you're just using USDT on those chains, you know, maybe that's fine. But what we want to do, there's 400 million people in the world that use Tether actively. And
well, same with Nigeria. That's what that Nigerian, his name's Olu, but he was saying that Tether is used in Nigeria because it's better than, they can't trade US dollar cross border. They can't use the US dollar the same way. So they are Bitcoin like maxis over there, but if they need to use a form of dollar for trade, they'd rather use Tether because they're not limited for their trades.
It's more widely accepted, you know, like, you know, to find someone who also accepts Bitcoin right now, if you're not already living in a circular economy, is pretty hard. And so that's why you have people like, you know, Jack Mallers figuring out how to basically instant swap between from your currency to Bitcoin and back to whoever's currency you're sending to. So merchants can basically accept Bitcoin without actually accepting Bitcoin or having to deal with the if they don't want Bitcoin, having to deal with the exchange or whatever. You know, trying to simplify that and make rails for everyone to be able to use the Bitcoin network for its speed and efficiency and security. over, you know, the actual asset that you hold and, you know, save for the long term. But yeah, going back to Aqua, it's like, because there are so many users of Tether in the world, all and most of those users have to use it through these altcoin, you know, wallets, essentially. We're hoping that we can kind of start to siphon people into the Aqua ecosystem, right? Mm-hmm. And in the Aqua ecosystem, you can use Tether, you can spend it, you can, you know, send it, you can save it. And, but you can also swap into LBTC very easily, very cheaply.
And so you can,
LBTC is basically layer two Bitcoin. So,
like the wallet works.
Yeah, similar. So the wallet works on Liquid. Are you familiar with the Liquid network?
Mm-hmm.
So the Liquid network is a Bitcoin sidechain, and it has faster blocks. So its blocks are 1 minute. So you can send transactions faster than you would on, you know, the main chain, which are 10 minute blocks. Mm-hmm. On top of that, they're extremely cheap transactions, and the transactions are confidential. So the Liquid network was developed by Blockstream as a way to scale Bitcoin in a confidential, private way, with low fee, with a low fee environment. Because so the Lightning network is another way to scale Bitcoin, but it doesn't work the same way that Bitcoin works, right?
It's like, not confidential, I think the best, right?
And it's not confidential. Yeah. The best way to explain the Lightning network is like, it's an airport, right? So like, you know, if, yeah, let's see how I start this. You know, there's Bitcoin on chain, right? And that's moving around, right? But if you want to send small amounts of Bitcoin, then it's only economical to do so if you put your Bitcoin at the airport and then you allow that Bitcoin to be, you know, sent across the world by jumping to different major cities. So if you want to go to Shanghai, China, maybe you have to jump to London and then you have to jump to Dubai. And then you have to jump, you know, somewhere else, and then you can end up at Shanghai, London. So if, you know, I'm sending to one person across the world, and there are these liquidity channels, which would be like the plane flights between different airports, and some are bigger than others, but I want to send to you. And the fastest way to get to you is to jump on a plane and go three different places, you know, and have three different layovers before it gets to you. And the thing with the Lightning Network is this happens instantly. So there are these liquidity providers, nodes, and channels between these nodes. And if I want to send Bitcoin to you, it finds a way through those channels to you in the most efficient way. But the thing is, it's all depends on liquidity. So you can't send huge transactions through the Lightning network because you will have liquidity problems. And so you see Liquid being this in-between scaling solution. That fixes problems that Lightning doesn't fix. And the reason that our wallet works with Liquid is because one, it's confidential. So you get an added layer of privacy in your transactions, which is great. A lot of Bitcoiners are concerned about that. I know some people probably don't care about privacy as much, but I think people should care more about privacy. And they're extremely cheap. And so on top of the way the Lightning network works, there are, if you want to have a self-custodial Lightning wallet, then you have to basically open channels with everyone that you're sending money to. And every time you open a channel, it is a more expensive fee than when there's already a channel existing.
So you mean creating new wallets does that?
No, it's when you send to someone. So, and again, this is maybe getting to the edge of my technical knowledge that I can speak about intelligently. You know, obviously I can read about this and kind of understand it conceptually, but basically every time if I want to send Bitcoin directly to you, we could open a channel, like we could establish a flight, right? Like if there's enough people going from Reno to Alaska, then Alaska Airlines will start a flight that goes straight from Reno to Anchorage because there's enough liquidity or, you know, demand for that flight. And so the same thing happens with Lightning channels between people. If I'm paying you enough, I want a direct channel with you and vice versa. And so you have to set up that channel. But the thing that Aqua does that's interesting is we hold all our layer two Bitcoin assets on the Liquid side chain. Mm-hmm. That way you have cheap and confidential transactions. Whenever you want to send Lightning to a friend to pay for, you know, or excuse me, send Bitcoin to a friend to pay for a lunch, you can just send them a Liquid transaction. It takes 1 minute. So okay. Not a big deal because you're not like in line trying to buy coffee. Mm-hmm. But if you're in line trying to buy coffee and you don't want to sit there, you know, twiddling your thumbs while the barista like is waiting for your transaction to go through, then you can send a Lightning payment. Mm-hmm. And what it does in the back end is it swaps from Liquid Bitcoin mm-hmm. onto the Lightning network using an atomic swap. And then it sends a Lightning payment. Mm-hmm. And then that person receives the Lightning payment. And so mm-hmm. if they're also using Aqua, then it would swap back into Liquid. But generally, like, you know, these POS systems that accept Bitcoin are just accept Lightning Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. And so the reason that that's significant is because it negates the we no longer have to establish a channel to mm-hmm. have a cheap transaction interface between us because it's swapping into Liquid or swapping into Lightning, sending on Lightning. And so you can have this chunk of L2 Bitcoin in a confidential private way, mm-hmm. and you can still spend it in an instant way using the Lightning network. And so it takes like a second or two more, but it's quite instant yeah. And it works great. And I think it's a game changer for Bitcoin wallets. I think you'll see probably more Bitcoin wallets do this in the future. And it's a step into what I am calling the Bitcoin super app era. And I think mm-hmm. Aqua is one of the first of these where it has all this different functionality, right? We have all the different layers of Bitcoin use inside the wallet. Mm-hmm. On top of that, we're integrating different marketplace, things like we have prepaid credit cards coming out, reloadable mm-hmm. prepaid credit cards. And so one day with Aqua soon, you will be able to get Bitcoin, receive Bitcoin mm-hmm. any way you want, receive USDT any way you want. Mm-hmm. And then if for whatever reason you need to spend that and there aren't merchants that accept Bitcoin in your area, then you can apply, sign up for, you know, get your Jan3 account, and then you get a Visa prepaid credit card that you can load up with any asset from the Aqua wallet. And it's a digital card. You can use it anywhere online. Eventually, we'll also have a physical card that we mail out to people. And so you have this instant integration with the fiat world while using Aqua still. And the reason that... Sorry, I'm just talking too much now.
No. I want to know more. I want to know everything. I want to download it right now. I'm like trying to figure out, like, I'm like hearing you talk and I'm like, oh, I want to download it. But the thing is, I want to know, like, a lot of people want to just be full Bitcoin. They want to get off. Like, I know some person recently I spoke to and he was like, I'm going all in. I'm just going to live a Bitcoin life, you know, and people have talked about doing, like, I know Strike doesn't offer it yet where I live. But they talked about doing a bill pay service. So I wonder with your prepaid debit card or whatever, could you do that? Like, could you live on a Bitcoin, like full Bitcoin? Could you be able to in the future, if you don't yet have it available, to be able to pay your bills through that so that you could just convert your fiat in there and just have, because that would be something that people want more options to be able to use that debit card to pay for other things in life so that they could just convert fully. And if you have that option, they could just keep reloading it and paying for things they need. I love that because it allows for mainstream adoption for people, because it is like your own hardware wallet really, but in a software, it's in your phone. So it does have its own seed phrase, right? Because you're self-custodying at that point.
Yep.
So that mm-hmm. allows for so much more mainstream adoption, because so many people that aren't into Bitcoin and do hear about, oh, you should, you know, hold your own keys to your own coins, they don't understand the whole, like, oh, now I need a device and I have to connect this device. And it's like complicated for people. But if they know they're self-custodying through an app, they have their seed phrase that they have to, you know, keep, you know, safe. Mm-hmm. But then you have just an app in your phone that, you know, allows for more mainstream adoption for people not to have to worry about an external device. So that's like a really good way to let people know that this is how you hold your own keys and this is your own, you're holding your Bitcoin.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why we say that Aqua is like, you know, the Bitcoin wallet that your grandma can use, right? We just kind of simplified that process So that, you know, you download the app, you create a wallet, and then boom, you're in the interface. You can already send and receive Bitcoin right there. On top of that, it's really easy to figure out how to do it. You know, there's a few buttons, send, receive, you know, this is your Bitcoin savings account. This is your spending account, your LBTC spending account. And then this is like your USDT account, essentially. Mm-hmm. It looks like an online banking app. And so I think that's helpful too for people that are like coming from, just a traditional fiat world, to open the app and be like, oh, wow, this Bitcoin app looks like my online bank. You know, it's not that much different. You just, it's just a different asset. It's a more beneficial asset to you. So that's helpful. And what you brought up about bill pay is like, you know, these are all things on our roadmap. And when I say a Bitcoin super app, I don't just mean let's spend and receive Bitcoin and USDT. It's like, let's live my entire life using Aqua. The idea is that some person in Argentina that hasn't had a bank account that has been, hit by all the inflation in Argentina, have had trouble accessing dollars to save in. They can now simply, if they learn about Aqua, they can now download Aqua. They can receive USDT, they can spend and save in Bitcoin, and they can get a credit card. They can get a Visa credit card that works at anywhere a Visa card would work. And they can pay for online things. They can buy a domain. They can start a business. And it's like all of a sudden you've bootstrapped someone that has been pushed down by the system for ages, that has not had the opportunity to do any of those things. And now you've given them the opportunity to do that, to start a business, to become an entrepreneur, to, you know, interact with the traditional finance or fiat system in a way that they just weren't even able to do before. So it's like, not even that Bitcoin is just good for saving and, you know, long-term savings. That's the simple explanation there. But the larger explanation is that, like, Bitcoin is going to allow people that haven't had access to the fiat system access to the fiat system through Aqua, through other apps that are doing similar things. And they're doing it in a self-custodial way. So it's like you own your access now. And it's, you have the choice to be able to do this or not. And it's just a really exciting prospect. I think we're at a very early time and stage in Bitcoin adoption still. You know, I think it's easy for people that who are in Bitcoin that, you know, stay up to the news with Bitcoin. It's like, it feels like it's been a long time. You know, every month of price action feels like a long time. But realistically, it's like the full capabilities of using the technology, onboarding people, just like what I described before, so that they have access both to a sound savings vehicle and to the traditional fiat world, is just huge for people. And, you know, fiat's going to exist for a while, like whether we like it or not. You know, the US dollar is not going to fail tomorrow. If it does fail tomorrow, it's going to be really bad for everyone, unless you own Bitcoin. But the majority of people don't own Bitcoin. And, and so it's like, we don't want that to happen. We want it to be a transition. We want this thing to slowly transition people to slowly wake up to Bitcoin, to see why, you know, to realize the potential, to realize why they should do this from an ethical standpoint on top of a, you know, self-preservation standpoint. And yeah, like, again, like, it just, you know, if it happens too quickly, then people are going to get hurt, you know, just similar to Weimar hyperinflation in Germany. Like, you know, if you owned gold in Weimar, you were fine, but majority of people probably didn't own gold, and they didn't realize what was going on. And so, yeah, it just becomes this like really difficult thing, if it happens really quickly. So it's my hope that, you know, we educate as many people as possible before, you know, fiat dies, essentially. And I think it, because of the positive interactions that we had from governments outside of the US and in the US, I think it will, you know, probably not, you know, the dollar's not going to die tomorrow, which is, you know, which is good for people.
Using Bitcoin every day and using the Aqua wallet every day, is that pretty widespread in El Salvador right now, or is it more in other countries that you mentioned?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a higher rates of adoption in Latin America. In El Salvador particularly, I don't know our exact numbers there. Mm-hmm. I mean, people are using Aqua there, but they're also using other wallets. You know, there was like the government Chivo wallet that is currently having some problems. It was never really
the go-to. Yeah,
but there was a few different options that people have been using in El Salvador. Mm-hmm. But we are seeing like large amounts of people adopting it in Brazil, in Argentina. And other smaller countries in Latin America. So it seems like it's helpful to people, right?
Yeah.
And I think in the US, if you asked any, average Bitcoiner in the US that's a maxi, right? They'd be like, why do you have USDT in your wallet? You know, what's the point of that? Like, I don't actually want USDT. I have enough Bitcoin that I just spend and save in Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. As much as I can. I like, put all my money into Bitcoin as soon as I get it. And, but that's a little bit of a financial privilege as well, right?
So that's the thing. We can trade the dollar back and forth here in America because we have these banks and but in these other countries where people don't have access to the dollar, but they want to use the dollar for trade. And even though the dollar's not going anywhere anytime soon, and again, we hope it doesn't in a fast way because that wouldn't be an easy transition. So this way, you're able to transition from that US dollar into this digital world where everyone could use it. So it's like you can't be against. I understand where people don't like the centralization and they don't like the the other altcoins where they feel like, you get rug pulled and everything, but this is literally just a digital dollar that you're using. Other countries have to use in the meantime until this entire world shifts, and we do want it to be in a peaceful, good way that it happens, because we all know eventually things like I'm sure most people feel like all roads lead to Bitcoin eventually. But yes, in this intermediate time where everybody isn't using Bitcoin right now, you need to have this digital dollar that the world can trade with, so you can't be completely against these stable coins, because the world needs to use them. They need to still trade with the dollar in the meantime. It's like how people always say, we want to go green tomorrow. We want the whole world to go green tomorrow. It's like, I understand that's great, but you can't just tomorrow stop using fossil fuels because everything will just like break down. Like, people need it in the meantime. And we have to have this transition because things could just become like come to a grinding halt.
You've seen Paolo Arduino, the CEO of Tether, say this himself. Like, Tether is only going to be a useful technology. It has an end date, essentially, to its use as a technology, because Bitcoin will take over eventually.
Yeah. And who said this?
I don't know how to pronounce his last name. Arduino, I think. Okay. He's the CEO of Tether.
Okay.
And so he himself is a Bitcoiner, and that's why we're lucky as Bitcoiners to have the largest stablecoin in the world be issued by Bitcoiners themselves, understanding the implications of Bitcoin as a technology and as a civilization transforming technology. Both Samson and Paolo have, I think, pretty bullish thoughts on how fast this might happen. I've heard, the 5, 10, 15 year range, and it could. It definitely could. It could happen that fast. And again, like I said, like, if it does happen that fast, then we need to educate people as fast as possible, because you have to get off zero. If you're not off zero, then it's a problem. Like, it's actually riskier not to own Bitcoin right now than it is to own Bitcoin. And you don't have to go all in. You don't have to put 100% of your assets into Bitcoin. You can put 1%, you can put 2%, you can put 10%, you can put 50%. You can figure out where you lie on that risk curve and figure out what makes sense for you. And probably what makes sense for you is, only allocate as much as you feel like you understand about Bitcoin.
Right.
If you don't understand it that much, maybe you're in a 1-5% allocation. If you've been exposed to it many times, you kind of get the basic concept of, Bitcoin is better money than gold. It's sound money. The dollar doesn't work as a as a savings account, but Bitcoin does. So maybe that's like a 10-50% allocation. And if you're a full blown maxi, then maybe you have an 80-100% allocation.
That is the perfect, I think, calculation method for when people ask how much Bitcoin should I buy. You should ask them, how well do you understand Bitcoin?
Exactly.
That's so perfect.
And if they don't understand Bitcoin well, then you should hand them a Bitcoin book and say, read this, mm-hmm. then let's talk again. Because mm-hmm. after you read book after book after book on Bitcoin, your conviction on that technology is going to increase exponentially.
Hand them your YouTube link. A lot of people don't like to read that much, but they'll watch YouTube all day. So,
yeah, I do a lot of audiobooks. I kind of educated myself on Bitcoin when I was mm-hmm. driving to and from film shoots mm-hmm. out in the West. Because all the cities are really far away from each other, so mm-hmm. like minimum 8-hour drive. An 8-hour drive is almost one audiobook. Depends on the audiobook, but
that's a perfect way. Yeah. And that's like what Saylor did with his company, with his board. He orange-pilled them by telling them, here's the information you need. When you're done, we'll come back and we'll talk. He didn't just go in there blind and just start telling them about Bitcoin.
You seem like the crazy person, right? Like you seem like the crazy person coming into the room to talk about this thing that you want to talk about that no one else really cares about or like wants to talk about. And and they're like, why are we talking about this? Isn't Bitcoin mm-hmm. a scam? Isn't Bitcoin, just a Ponzi scheme? Isn't it a bubble? Mm-hmm. Won't it crash like by 80%? Hasn't it crashed by 80% like 3 times already? Mm-hmm. And you see people associating risk with volatility, right? Mm-hmm. And I get where that sentiment comes from, because sure, if you buy at the wrong time, you could have a really bad time for like 2 years.
Depending on how much you understand, right? If you know exactly fully what's going on, you're not scared. But if you're just, you'll be a panic seller if you go all in and don't fully understand it, what you have yet,
Yeah. I watched this video last night, actually, from Rajat Soni. Are you familiar with him?
No.
He's a CFA. But mm-hmm. he is a CFA that talks, advocates for Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. And he broke down, allocations to Bitcoin, kind of similar to what I was just saying, mm-hmm. how you should, measure your allocation based off your understanding of the technology. Mm-hmm. But then he showed in a spreadsheet that like for every $100 you have invested, the allocation from 1 to 100%, how that would affect your portfolio over a 20-year time horizon. Mm-hmm. And it's crazy. Even a 1% allocation to Bitcoin versus like the stock market benefits you a huge amount in 20 years because of the compound growth rate of Bitcoin versus mm-hmm. the compound growth rate of stocks. And mm-hmm. on top of that, you start to realize when you get more and more into Bitcoin that Bitcoin is less risky than owning any stock in the stock market. Mm-hmm. A company is not, is controlled by, a group of people. That group mm-hmm. of people has to make decisions on the company's mm-hmm. behalf to guide, what it's going to do in the future, to adapt mm-hmm. to different changing environments in the economy, to adapt to competition in the market. Right. And because of that, you have to make lots of choices, and that those groups of people don't always make the right choices. And so if you're mm-hmm. allocated, like the reason that people say to be diversified in the stock market is because of what I just said. It's like you don't mm-hmm. know if one company is going to make the wrong decision one day and then mm-hmm. absolutely tank. Like think about what happened to Blockbuster versus Netflix. Blockbuster had the ability to buy Netflix for like, I can't remember how much it was. I think it was like $1 million mm-hmm. or maybe mm-hmm. it was like $1 or $10 million. Mm-hmm. Don't quote me there. I don't know the mm-hmm. real numbers, but they were, mm-hmm. had the ability to buy Netflix for pennies to the dollar on what it's valued at right now. And they laughed them out of the room. And so it's like stuff like that. You realize that like you're just banking. If you have stuff, you're just banking on the decisions of the company. Mm-hmm. So people don't do that a lot. They have to, mm-hmm. Buy index funds that take the top 500 stocks. So you're diversifying your risk.
Technically, we probably should have crashed way more times, but they haven't because the government's like, no, this, our economy's good. See, like we're okay. Yeah. So it's not even real. It's like none of it is even real. It's like it's just inflated money supply that's only benefiting the people that do have any of these stocks a little bit. And they're just kind of coasting with inflation. They're not really surviving it. And so it's just a very manipulated form of investing where Bitcoin is just, once you understand it, you realize that it's real.
So I my fiance is on a call upstairs. I probably get off the line.
Yeah, that's okay. No problem.
Yeah, this was a great conversation.
I'm so looking forward to getting the Aqua Wallet and sharing my knowledge about it. I can't wait to clip some of these highlights too. So I'm gonna kind of make a few clips out of this. So thank you so much for joining me.
We'll probably make some on our side as well.
Yes.
Thanks for the opportunity and
thank you.
We can speak again sometime.
That'd be great. Thank you. Yeah. Keep doing your awesome work with your videos. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.